For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Confederations Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Today, into the semis. In Belo Horizonte, Freddie Starr and Small Paul say bye-bye to Uruguay and set up Sunday meet with either Italy or Spain. I wonder which. The pal asks, will it be the same pain as in the Ukraine? For the Azzurri, hears about getting stuck in a lift with Clarence Seedorf and ponders Tevez, Cavani and more in this edition of Confederations Cup Football Daily. Yep, we're back, everybody. Hope you've been well. Confederations Cup reaching the semi-final stage on Wednesday evening. Paul Doyle was all over it in minute-by-minute fashion for The Guardian. Hi, Paul.
Hi, I was indeed all over the place.
Right, and we were agog, James.
Yeah, agog. Yeah,
watching on the big screens at Guardian Pod HQ. And in a little bit we hear from Brandon Duarte, who's actually there at the Mineral. The tear gas are wafting in around him. But the first thing to say is Brazil are in the final. Paul, we've been talking a little bit about, are this Brazil any good? Are they getting a bit better game by game? Are they building? Are they?
Well, they're very much what you'd expect from Scolari, aren't they? I mean, they're built, first of all, to be functional and solid, and then rely on occasional flourishes of individual ingenuity to break the deadlock. I don't think they were getting better tonight. It was probably their worst performance of the tournament so far, although you could say that that's because Uruguay provided them with the stiffest opposition they've encountered so far. But I was a bit disappointed that Scolari again showed his tactical intransigence, and given that we all knew how Uruguay were going to start and sort of coil deep and try and spring forward on the counter-attack, and he just went again with quite a conservative selection and formation. But he changed that around the hour mark with the introduction of his substitutes, which changed the game and gave Brazil a little bit of stimulus that it ultimately got them the victory.
Indeed, you had De Julio Cesar also saving a penalty.
Of course, yeah, good save. Not a particularly brilliant penalty, but good
performance.
And on the subject of the penalty, which was correctly awarded when David Luiz grabbed, I can't remember who it was now, but whoever he did, he grabbed him. The sort of thing that seldom gets punished. But once the referee established the fact that he was going to punish it, we didn't see that sort of thing again for the rest of the game.
Good to see that.
There was a big build-up about the referee, who's made a lot of in the BBC commentary as being card happy. But he was actually probably quite lenient, wasn't he? He could have sent a couple of players off, I thought.
He could have booked lots of them for diving towards the end as well.
Right, Marcelo, good game from him. In an otherwise fairly nondescript performance from much of the Brazil team.
Well, I was again impressed by Paulinho.
Right.
And he was involved in the first goal. Great pass for Neymar and control. And then obviously he scored the winning goal. And as Paul was saying, I think... Yeah, this Brazil team is quite functional on the whole, and it does rely on its, certainly in forward position for its individuals to come to the fore. And Neymar and Paulinho have been those guys in this tournament.
Hello!
It's Fernando Duarte! Listen, Fernando, what are the papers in Brazil going to be saying about that Brazil performance tomorrow, beyond the fact that they're now in the final?
I think people are going to be a bit scared. The team showed some nerves when they played. It's the first competitive, knockout stage matches they play under Filipão and Scolari. And obviously, it showed. Players are nervous. I think that in the first 10 minutes, Uruguay could have actually created much more problems than the penalty. It was almost like they were a bit frozen. And the funny thing is that Uruguay also presented a bit more tenacity. They were kind of like marking Brazil a bit further up the pitch. And that's pretty much what Spain might do if they face Brazil in the final. So it was kind of like a simulation, a five-minute simulation of a Spanish kind of like pressure marking that Brazil failed, in my opinion.
Fernando, what is Hulk for?
Well, Hulk is a battering ram that has a mean left foot, and Scolari thinks it can be useful for the team. I agree with him. And he had a shocker today. But you know what? Oscar had a shocker in other games as well, and he just was to try to open up spaces. And I think he has a function in this team. Unfortunately, he's not clicking. I just don't see how Lucas Leiva could have changed this. Perhaps it's a problem that Brazil has. They might, use him in the first half and then bring Lucas Moura, sorry, bring Lucas Moura in the second half and try to open up more spaces. But how could an important player under what Scolari needs, which is some kind of bullying into the opposition? He loves the gegenpress and the German gegenpress and tall players. And Hulk is one of the tallest amongst the forwards.
Right, this gegenpressing again. Hey, Stilton posting in and saying there are two things missing, in his point of view, from the Confederation Cup so far. There hasn't been any talk about the goal line technology. Has it been influential at all, Fernando?
Well, I haven't seen any play or any kind of contentious decision. So I don't think the goal line technology was used at all so far.
Right. The second thing,
I remember that I've been following Brazil, so...
Yeah, that's true. The second thing is funks. The next time Fernando Duarte is on, can he take us through some of the local funks that have been created for the tournament? Remember, says Stilton, the great one you sang a couple of years ago about Peter Crouch, Boneca do Posto, no?
Well, maybe we could say that Neymar is a guy who would dribble his mother and his grandmother before he passed the ball.
Really?
That's what we say about him.
Right.
He should release the ball a bit more, so... This is the guy you're going to say, oh my God, that guy's going to dribble his grandmother and his mother before he passes the ball to somebody. So it could be Neymar, but he's become much more useful for the scheme. So.
Right. Stilton particularly was interested in the songs. He remembered the Boneca do Posto funky that you sang about Peter Crouch. Has there been anything new on that front for the Seleção players?
Yeah, there's a song for Fred. When Fred scores, they use, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Freddy Krueger. So whenever Fred scores, they say, "O Fred, you vai te pegar. O Fred, you vai te..." Which is a Fluminense song, so I shouldn't be singing because I hate them.
Right.
But, Fred scored 7 goals in 9 matches for Brazil. He's Freddy Poacher, as we call him here.
Freddy Poacher.
O Fred, you vai te pegar means Fred is going to catch you. Fred's going to get you.
Right.
Just like in the Nightmare on Elm Street. Fred looks a bit like Freddy Krueger because he's big and weird.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm getting that myself, but I did enjoy the ESPN presenter. Actually, I didn't enjoy it that much, but there was an ESPN presenter who did a song about how Hulk has a big bottom. I don't know if you saw that one.
Yeah, no, I did. I did tweet that. I found it hilarious, but I can't sing the tune for some reason.
No.
The tune hasn't caught up.
Lost.
We say that Hulk, he's got like an ass pretty much like Kenny Dalglish. Unfortunately, his legs and his brain haven't followed up the great Scotsman, the great Liverpool legend.
Right.
But, he's got a bit of Kenny Dalglish from him, the ass.
All right. Fernando, listen, so everything calming down out at the Mineirão, and you're heading off to the final.
Yes, we go to Rio. We had protests outside. It's emerged that a boy might have gotten seriously hurt. He fell from a bridge. We don't know that yet. I think things are not going to be calming down, James. I pretty much think we're going to have a World Cup with protests next year, the Confederations Cup. We will have the final game next Sunday, and I think people in Rio will still come to the streets, but at least we've seen that the police has started to understand a bit more what's going on. It's a shame that the tournament's being marred by that, but I also think it's a fundamental right of the Brazilians to protest, and if they want to protest against FIFA, FIFA has to do something about it. If they decide to try to take the World Cup away, as some outlets in Europe are saying, which I think is absolutely followed, if they try to do that, they're going to be seen as an organization who runs away from the people, and I really don't think they're going to do it.
Fernando, magnificent stuff. Speak to you at the weekend.
See you at the weekend, boys.
Fernando Duarte in his irrepressible form once again. Hey, Edson Cavani, James, he woke up a bit today, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he'd been threatened by Napoli's president, Aurelio De Laurentiis, that he'd break his face earlier in the week. I thought he was Uruguay's best player on the pitch. I thought not only did he score, and to some extent he needed a goal because his international record isn't all that great compared with Suarez and Forlan. But he was everywhere. It was a classic Cavani performance where he puts in such a shift, which I think few strikers in the world can. I think that's one of his USPs, being able to do so much work up and down the left and yet remain lucid enough in front of goal to score.
Absolutely.
Why did the Napoli president threaten to smash his face in? Because his value is going down.
I think his value is fairly protected by his buyout clause.
Which expires pretty soon.
Exactly. So that was why he was going to say, if Cavani lets... this clause expire on August 10th and he still hasn't found me a buyer for him and he goes past then, I'll break his face, which Cavani said was a little bit strong. and he wanted a face-to-face chit-chat.
It's interesting, really. Everybody's been having a chat about Cavani and his future, De Laurentiis, and particularly Mr. and Mrs. Cavani, Mom and Pop.
Brother Cavani as well. As
Brother Cavani, right. But the player himself has yet to actually come out and say, there have been one or two quotes about how could you turn down the likes of Chelsea and Real Madrid. But the latest reports out of Naples seem to be that Chelsea indeed are the likely destination. Is that right, James?
Certainly in terms of English interest, Chelsea seems to be the most firm. But you get the impression with Cavani that his preference, well, certainly if you talk to his mum, dad and brother, is that his preference would be to go to Real Madrid. And I don't know whether we'll see more of that now that Ancelotti has been appointed, and we'll see how their transfer strategy unfolds, etc. But I think Cavani on the whole has conducted himself quite well. Inevitably, you know, people have been calling him a traitor, and you're back in Naples, and there have been various banners around the city and the training ground. We were talking about this earlier. It would be great, I think, if he were to stay. I really don't think that's going to happen now. I think De Laurentiis has it in mind to sell him because it's kind of win-win for him. If he keeps him, he keeps a world-class player. If he sells him, he'll get a lot of money to reinvest into this team. And you know, make a push for the Scudetto. You know, they've already signed Dries Mertens.
Right,
that's the first signing of the Benitez era. But
what kind of player is he, James? For anyone who's not familiar with Dries Mertens,
Dries first name terms. He's a goal scorer, but he also sets up a lot of goals. Sets up a lot of goals. I think he's played sort of more than 80 games for PSV and has assisted 45 goals, I think.
So, really?
Yeah, he's one of those mixed. Yeah, you never know with Benitez; he might turn him into the next Dirk Cowd.
Exciting times in Naples. In the meantime, heading into Serie A, very much Carlos Tevez, which I bet Juve fans are very excited about, because you now got a classic big man, little man forward partnership potentially there with Fernando Llorente. And Carlos Tevez.
Yeah, absolutely. I think many people thought he'd be going to Milan. You know, 18 months ago, he was sat in a Rio de Janeiro restaurant with Adriano Galliani. But it's the top player. That's the term that Juventus' general manager has used the last 3 years. And they've been linked with players like Suarez, Robin van Persie, and ended up with someone like Nicolas Benter at the summer. So fans have often had high hopes and only to be disappointed. Whereas I think now they've finally come good on this promise. He's been given the number 10 shirt, first player to wear it after Del Piero. I think there's a lot of hoo-haing about that, but apparently Tevez wore the number 10 shirt, Maradona's number 10 shirt at Boca.
Right.
I guess Omar Sivori, who used to play for Juve, and there's a little angel with a dirty face, a bit like Tevez, wore it when he was at Juve as well.
So, right, interesting.
Should be good.
Interesting, all right. Good. Of course, the next question is what exactly City are going to do, because apparently Edin Dzeko's Edin, in a very real sense, out the door, and Tevez is gone, and Ballos obviously went back at Christmas. So they're getting a bit thin on the ground, are they not, the forwards there? Aguero and Guidetti?
Yeah, he missed most of last year with some kind of weird disease, I think. Ah. But before that, he'd been on loan at Feyenoord. And,
kind of disease?
I don't know. I don't think it was a tropical The thing is, he had quite an interesting childhood because his dad went to open some football schools, I think, in Kenya.
Oh.
So he grew up playing football around elephants and stuff like that.
Right.
He goes back there every year and sort of, tries to make them as successful as he is. Yeah, that's his sort of motivational speech. You can do what I've done, you know. It'd be good to see him get a chance, I think, because at Feyenoord he scored, I think, nearly a goal a game. He became a sort of little folk hero there.
I'm sure they'll just stick with him instead of making a really big signing between now and the end of the season. transfer season. Interesting. Simon Mignolet's gone to Liverpool. We seem to be doing a transfer roundup here, excitingly enough. Is that an upgrade on your Pepe Reina, is it, Paul?
Yeah, I think it is. I think Mignolet was probably the best goalkeeper in the Premier League last year.
Do you think
year,
so, along, really?
Well, alongside Cech and Begovic, maybe.
Right.
But certainly he's very solid. I haven't quite seen enough of him to know if he matches Reina's distribution prowess, which is a very strong feature of his game. But certainly in terms of his saving and organizational defense and all the rest of it, he seems to be pretty good at that.
Excellent. All right, well, there you go. Before we move on to our special preview of tomorrow's, well, Thursday's semi-final Spain against Italy, here's a quick update, because I mentioned the other day bumping into Gianluca Vialli at the Fulham Cineworld at the popcorn queue. I don't know, have you ever bumped into a famous player in an incongruous location there, Paul? Roy Hodgson in a garden shed in Croydon, anything like that?
No, I was once trapped in a lift with Clarence Seedorf.
No.
Yeah. And without hilarious consequences. Yeah. He just turned out to be a nice, affable guy, and we had a friendly chat.
But how long were you in there for?
Well, less than 10 minutes. But 8
still,
minutes, about. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you talk about?
At the time, we talked about Robbie Keane, first of all, because Robbie Keane was at Inter at the time.
Oh, really?
And,
okay, yeah.
So we chatted about him, and he said what a nice chap Robbie Keane was.
Right.
And then we talked about what a nice chap Patrick Kluivert was.
Right. Okay.
And then we talked about what a bummer it was being in a steel box for quite a while.
Okay. Cool. And you could he was doing it in English, but he could have had that conversation in 5 or 6 languages.
Yeah, we might have got to that point if we'd been in there for much longer.
Right. James, how about you? It's a great story, by the way, Paul.
Not really. I've been in a pizza place with Thomas Vermaelen.
Right.
That's about it. I didn't get to see what pizza he chose.
Right, it's interesting. Arsenal fans might be hoping it wasn't the Quattro Stagioni, eh?
Yeah, or Pizzagate. Yeah, I didn't see any pizza flying around.
Right.
It was obviously not Cesc Fabregas.
Yep. Okay. Well, here's some of the listeners. I think we asked if the listeners. Yeah, there have been some terrific ones. Pablo El Brujo unloads a full 3. Well, here's 2 of them anyway. He lived around the corner from Darren Anderton, who was full of himself. He met David Seaman outside Sainsbury's in Hemel Hempstead. Coconuts went to school with Damien Duff and he was crap. Lived on the same street, says Coconuts, as Angelo Di Livio in Firenze, and saw him most days bombing around in a grey Ferrari-like car. Coconuts also claims to have met The Edge from U2 at a bowling alley and seen the Fonz, in an airport. There we go. 3 times. And each time he was getting a ride in one of those disability go-karts. Interesting. Milan, 1158, says he was at the same hotel in Marbella as Man United back in the day, and Joe Jordan was a really nice guy. King Carlos claims to have gone to a kids' disco on the night of the Man United treble celebrations in 1999 and met Wes Brown, who seemed a bit miffed to have been caught there rather than in a hot tub with Sheringham and some lasses. Oliver Noakes, Wild Wadi Water Park in Dubai with a very topless Ian Dowie. There's a thought for you. I'll whiz through the others. Timmy Tank, some Matt Busby falling down some concrete steps in Mallorca. I helped him up, says Timmy Tank. And Mikey Mike, 2711, says, I served Anders Limpar at the Pizza Hut in High Barnet once with his family, wife and daughter in the early 90s. He tipped me, says Mikey Mike, but they hardly spoke to each other. I believe he's now divorced. There you go.
Wow.
Harry Angel, Jose Mourinho in the underground car park in Porto Airport, and Stephen Ireland in a Portaloo in Slane. Apparently, he claims this is absolutely true. And Joseph Linhoff says, bumped into Avram Grant in a strip club in Cambodia. No joke. I don't know.
Cambodia.
You've been busy people, listeners. Busy people. And Clarence Adolf in a lift. Paul. Amazing, amazing. Now, let's move on to Thursday night's excitements in the Confederations Cup as Italy try and stop the unstoppable-looking Spain and their march to their first ever Confederations Cup title. The big news is... What is the big news, Prandelli-wise?
Well, they're trying another new system.
The 3-5-2, because it worked back in
back in the group stage of Euro 2012. Yeah, they put on a very good performance that day. Drew 1-1, perhaps should have even won if Balotelli... Remember, he was through on goal and took a bit too much time and let the chance get away from him. But they'll be without Balotelli, of course, who's had to go home after a calf injury. Abate, obviously, is not going to be there. Although that's not that big thing. There's doubts about Pirlo as well. Italy are having to patch themselves up. I think the last couple of days have spent working more on psychology and, you know, spirit rather than on tactical preparation. Obviously, they're prepared tactically, but it's been more about getting the attitude and getting them optimistic.
Right. A lot of people would think that they've got a very slim chance of beating Spain this time around. It was 1-1 in that their opening game of Euro 2012. They were playing with two up front that day, Balotelli and Cassano, actually it was. Whereas Balotelli out, Cassano obviously not part of the
Di Natale was the goal scorer.
Di Natale. Yeah. Great stuff. He's not there either. And it looks like they're going to go with just one up front and that one being Girardino, which isn't the best. The thing about the three centre-halves is that the Juve players, Chiellini, Barzagli, etc., feel a little bit more confident that way. Is that right?
Yeah, this is the way Juve play. They play 3-5-2. I think there's going to be a slight adjustment in that. It's going to be a 3-4-2-1.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, because Italy's defence has been uncharacteristically shaky. They've never conceded so many goals in a group stage of any
18-3
major competition.
Games, is it?
Yeah.
Spain, by contrast, have conceded just one and scored a whopping 15, although they did have the advantage of Tahiti in their group. What do you think, Paul? Can you see Spain getting derailed by the Azzurri?
No, I can't really. Spain seem to be getting better. Again, they haven't been really tested in this tournament so far, but they've played with an exuberance that hasn't always been there with them. I mean, they've taken more risks than in the past, which Nigeria actually almost exploited, because Spain did have a vulnerability at the back that hasn't always been evident. But they seem to have more diversity in the way they attack. I don't know if it's because Javi Alonso is out or because they're just feeling carefree in a relatively minor tournament. And they've got greater speed up front. And they've actually got an array of strikers who are in form now, with both Torres looking very dangerous again, Villa and Soldado, who I think might be out actually tomorrow.
Possibly so, but Italy with Gilardino up front, why not El Shaarawy?
I mean, he's only scored once in 2013, I think, and that was the Milan derby. Yeah, he had a very difficult end to the season. A lot was made of how when Balotelli joined the club, you know, he kind of, after carrying Milan on his shoulders for the first half of the season, faded. There's been speculation that he's got tendonitis in his knee, which has held him up. There's also the beginning of the Confederations Cup. There's a lot of speculation about his future. I don't think there's much in that, but it was certainly all the questions that were asked to him were about that, which were a bit distracting, I think. And Prandelli took him to one side and thought he'd leave him out. But yeah, this great partnership, which we first saw when Italy played France in Parma. They lost that game, but Balotelli and El Shaarawy combined really well, and that was said to be one of the basis of why Milan moved for Balotelli to bring these two together. It hasn't really taken off, and also I think he just needs a rest. It's his first full season, really, and also, you know, first games as a full international, so I think El Shaarawy could do to just put his feet up on the beach and recharge ahead of next season, really.
All right, then. Well, it's a big ask, and if there is one team that looks worthy of this Confederations Cup trophy, it is very much Spain. But we'll find out Thursday night. Those two teams, those old rivals, take each other on again, and straight after that we'll be giving our thoughts on the whole subject for you, available probably Friday morning when producer Ben gets it all taped up and spick and span. That's it for today, though. So many thanks to aforementioned Uber producer Ben, to Paul Doyle and James Horncastle and Fernando Duache. We'll speak to you on Thursday night, Friday morning.
CCFD with AC Jimbo. Woof.